Support for WGLT comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology, celebrating 30 years as local hearing healthcare professionals. With a practice featuring 5 doctors of audiology, including 2 who wear hearing devices themselves, BNA takes a genuine interest in each patient. They believe those personal partnerships are how people embrace hearing technology and keep hearing the most important sounds of their lives. More information at bnaudiology.com. Bloomington Normal Audiology, here for you.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker.
All this week on Sound Ideas, we recap the significant stories of the year, including the dialogue on race relations.
We just speak like how we learn. And, you know, to some people that sounds white, to us, it just sounds normal.
Brandon Bell was part of the series Living Black in Bloomington Normal. You'll also hear from the first tenured African-American professor at Lincoln College, a student who had the uncomfortable epiphany that most hate crimes are against blacks when she was doing research on hate, and an activist who says he's been exposed to bias and microaggressions from a young age. That and a news update on the way. This is Sound Ideas on WGLT. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Let's run down some of the day's top stories. McLean County's COVID testing positivity rate continues to drop, but hospitalizations and other metrics are trending in the wrong direction. The McLean County Health Department reports 237 new confirmed cases over the weekend as the testing positivity rate fell to 8.4%. That's down more than a full percentage point from last week. 4 more people from McLean County are hospitalized with COVID-19, bringing the total to 28 hospitalized patients, just under the record high of 29. The county's intensive care bed capacity worsened over the weekend. 92% of ICU beds are occupied. That's up from 88% on Friday. The number of total hospital beds available doubled, though. 32% of all hospital beds are open. Regional health metrics could enable a return to Tier 2 mitigations soon. That would enable bars and restaurants in the county to reopen. And that comes as COVID death rates reach a new high. McLean County Health Department Administrator Jessica McKnight says people still need to follow health protocols.
It is a difficult concept because we are seeing our cases, our daily cases, going down, but seeing deaths increase. And that's why the mitigations are based on science, and they're helping us to prevent further hospitalizations and deaths.
A 20-county region that includes McLean County has had a drop in testing positivity rates, but hospital capacity must still improve. Bloomington Performing Arts Manager James Mack has posted bond following an arrest on a domestic battery charge. Court records show the 51-year-old Mack was arrested Friday following an incident at his home west of Bloomington. Prosecutors say Mack was having an argument with a person who was a minor December 11th. Mack allegedly pushed the person off a chair at the kitchen table, causing the minor to fall to the floor. Mack posted $150 bond Saturday and was released from the McLean County Jail. He joined the city in 2018 after holding a similar job in Texas. Bloomington officials say they won't comment on personnel matters. A second judge has rejected a request for a new judge by 2 people charged with looting last summer. Defense lawyer Jonathan McEldowney says Judge William Yoder's refusal to consider fully negotiated pleas with a specific sentence shows bias against his clients. The 2 cases involve 38-year-old Mary Bailey and 23-year-old Travis Blake, though more than 40 people face looting-related charges. Judge Paul Lawrence has ruled Yoder showed no prejudice and that there's no rule that a judge has to accept a plea deal. Research is beginning to show at-risk students are at higher risk of learning less during online pandemic school teaching. Unit 5 Superintendent Kristen Weichel says teachers are trying to address that and will do more when teaching gets back to normal.
It may be short-term remediation that could happen during the traditional school day. We may have to look at some intervention or some extra opportunities outside of the typical school year.
Michael says there will be a challenge in identifying which students have education deficits and how broad those are. She says teachers will address that on a group and individual basis. Winter has arrived and central Illinois could see snow later this week, but the chance for a white Christmas seems fairly slim. Chris Martin, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Lincoln, says Friday's temperatures will be sharply colder with a high in the 20s and wind chills dipping below zero. But as for precipitation this week,
we do have a potential for some snow coming in actually later on Wednesday. Right now, we're still watching that system, but it looks like anything we do get snowfall-wise is going to be pretty light.
He says the overall winter outlook will be up and down from a temperature standpoint, likely resulting in less than normal snowfall for the season. This is Sound Ideas on 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org. I'm Charlie Schlenker.
Support for WGLT comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology, the best hearing device center in the Pantograph Reader's Choice Awards for the sixth year in a row. Bloomington Normal Audiology thanks the listeners and their continued vote of confidence as the leaders in hearing and technology. More information at bnaudiology.com. Bloomington Normal Audiology, here for you.
You're listening to Bloomington Normal's public media. Today on Sound Ideas, we revisit some of the best stories of 2020 and our series Living Black in Bloomington Normal. Brandon Bell says growing up in Bloomington Normal was a much different experience than what he now sees living in St. Louis. He says he also had a different experience growing up than his younger brother, Chris Belt. Bell spoke with Ariel Jones.
I didn't even know white people existed in Chicago. And it wasn't until one time we went to the lakefront and I was like blown away by the fact that there was actually white people in Chicago. When I would go visit my cousins up there, they, you know, you talk white. And the thing is, in listening to other black men speak on this, we all have a very similar dialect, you know, and a lot of that just has to do with us growing there. And it's not a thing of speak proper or anything. We just speak like how we learn. And, you know, to some people that sounds white, to us, it just sounds normal.
So how does that experience when you go somewhere else, I guess, how did that affect you coming back to the home base when Bloomington Normal was your home base?
I grew up in 710 West Orlando, which is on the north side of Normal. It's low income housing. One of the things for me early on is in the community, outside of school and outside of shopping, what I came home to every day was a group of hardworking black people trying to find their way in a predominantly white community. My experiences growing up were no different than anybody growing up in Chicago. I mean, it was us. It was uniquely us. We carved out this space, and I would say that growing up that way gave me a very traditional black experience. Barbecues every Sunday, double dutch, freeze tag, all those games. You know, I would just say hood games and whatnot, but they're games that kids of every race play. Growing up in Bloomington, people wouldn't think that you have that. Now, people would always say, oh, Sunnyside or Woodhill. That's where that was at. And now Orlando. But Orlando was different even then than it is now growing up. Because growing up in Orlando, the goal was to leave those circumstances. It was weird because when you would cross Main Street to go to Fairview Elementary, this is where I went to elementary school with my peers. Oh, you guys come from Orlando. But for us, it was like, man, we just go to school with you guys. Like, that's home. Like, we go to school with you, but this is home. And matter of fact, there is two white families there with kids my age. I mean, they were great, man. Those dudes, we're still friends and we can still reach out and speak with them and just laugh about growing up. And it was the opposite for them when they came home. And there was that dynamic here.
Now, yeah. I want to know the difference between you and your brother.
So being the oldest and then, you know, being the first one out there, like, so first off, me and my brother have different last names. And that was something that was definitely an issue. In one incident in fifth grade, actually, I'll never forget it. Like, a teacher literally argued with me about my last name being Bell. Like, well, that's not your brother's last name. I'm like, I know. That's my last name. Well, I don't believe you. And that really bothered me. But yeah, that was something that once he got, you know, to the age where he was in school and then identified as being siblings, that stigma of having different last names was something that actually always kind of bothered me a little bit. I've always very vivid memories of being treated a little different in school. I don't want to say I was a bad kid. I was mischievous, though. I did mischievous things all the time. But I think the response from the teachers was, oh, there's this black kid acting out in class.
Getting that label of disruptive and whatever else, do you think it had to do it being your personality, or did they lump race into that?
A little bit of both. It's funny because a couple years ago, we found an old report card of mine. The first semester report was, I have concerns for Brandon. He's rough and aggressive. He puts his hands on the other students all the time. He is consistently disruptive. But then turn around the next semester, they had a meeting with my dad and my mom. The second semester report was like, Brandon is a wonderful young man, was a pleasure to have in class all year, and had just the zeal for life. And my kids laugh and they say, well, not much has changed. But the thing was, is that the contrasting reports was, once my parents met and they kind of talked with the teacher, I think the teacher actually took the time to understand me a little bit and then realized, like, yeah, he has all this energy. He's eager to learn. Like, I love to learn. I have this insatiable thirst for knowledge. I think it comes from not wanting to be wrong about anything. Accumulation of knowledge. Well, the more I know, the less people can tell me that I'm wrong. But that sort of mindset, having that, is something that, again, like going to school here in Bloomington, unless you actually took the time to really understand me, you would just always think that I was disruptive.
Normal native and now St. Louis resident Brandon Bell speaking with Arielle Jones for our series Living Black in Bloomington Normal. We're recapping that series today on Sound Ideas on 89.1 FM and WGLT.org. The first black tenured professor at Lincoln College says the killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis police custody led to difficult conversations with colleagues, friends, and her children. Janine Peacher says she lost friends who don't understand the rage and loss that sparked looting after the Floyd killing. Peacher talks with student reporter Darnisha Mitchell. Peacher says friends and colleagues from diverse backgrounds simply don't understand.
You know, I have had people reach out to me, my non-white friends, my non-white colleagues reach out to me and basically just say, you know, I have no idea what it's like, what you are experiencing. I am the mother of two young African-American males. They are in college. My fear, some of my trepidation, some of my anxiety, they try to understand, but I guarantee you some of the same conversations that we've had with our sons are not the same ones that they've had with their sons. And for the ones who reached out to me, they made an attempt. I came across their mind. They thought about me, and I was very appreciative of that.
How has systemic racism impacted your life?
Oh, my goodness. Well, you can't be black and say you have never experienced it. You know, being right here in Lincoln, Illinois, at Lincoln College, where just until recently have we sort of had an influx, a few more people of color to join our faculty. But, you know, systemic racism for me was just a way of life in Texas. There were stores that we could not go into. There were parts of town that we could not go into. There were conditions at our school. And I think it has sort of been the impetus behind why I have devoted so many years of my life to higher ed, so that, you know, I help students to understand and prepare them for the world that awaits them. Many of them coming from our inner city Chicago schools will say, well, I haven't encountered it. But I think when they begin to see, you know, how ill-equipped they were for college, I think many of them began to see that that was systemic, that some of the funding was not funneled to their school. So it has just been so much a part of me. I don't know, it kind of sparks a nerve every time I think about it.
Has it ever came to moments where racism impacted how you view yourself?
How I viewed myself? Oh, without a doubt. You begin to question your craft. It definitely shakes your self-confidence. In one way, it can cause you to close the door and have a moment. And then it has caused you to just dig really deep and just say that, you know, I am forging ahead for those that have to come behind me.
You mentioned how you and your husband are having conversations with your two sons about racism. Mm-hmm. What does that conversation look like?
Our conversations have been, we want you to come home. As it relates to police brutality, it's you comply and then we'll complain later. One of the hardest things that my youngest one asked us, and it stumped us, and I don't have an answer then, and I really don't have one now, but he asked us, now, we do everything you tell us to do, and we still don't come home. What happens if we do all of that, and it doesn't really matter? For a moment, your heart stops, you turn and you look at your spouse of 24 years, and you go, how do you answer that? Today, we can give him an answer because he's absolutely correct. We teach them what to do, what to say, how to act, and what if that's not enough? What if somebody still feels like their lives are not worth it? So we continue to teach them to be good men. Now, society will then begin to see you in a different light. And the only thing you can do is be your true, authentic self. But you're never really prepared for it until it happens. Both of them, unfortunately, have heard someone use the N-word on them. That conversation was quite emotional. You know, why would he call me that? I thought we were friends, so probably too young. I didn't want them to experience it at that age, but unfortunately, that's not going to be the last time.
Janine Peacher is a professor at Lincoln College and an Illinois State University graduate. She talked with student reporter Darnisha Mitchell for the WGLT series Living Black in Bloomington Normal that we're recapping today as part of a best-of edition of Sound Ideas. Bloomington native Gianna Fennell says it wasn't until her freshman year at Normal West High School when she realized her skin color might be a problem for some people. Fennell is now a junior telecommunications major for video production at Ball State University in Muncie, Indiana. In this episode of the WGLT series Living Black in Bloomington Normal, Fennell tells John Norton she was doing a research project on hate crimes at Normal West when she realized most of the cases were against black people. Fennell says she connected the dots to comments by and questions from her classmates.
I had mostly Caucasian friends, and there would be like moments when they would like say stuff to me in like high school, mostly freshman year. I realized that was different because they would point things out in my skin tone, or they would ask me questions that they wouldn't ask other people. They weren't necessarily mean, but they weren't necessarily something that you would ask anybody on a random day.
Do you recall how that struck you?
It made me feel separated from them because I never thought of them as anything but a friend, like, and I never thought of them by their skin color. So it like kind of made the space in between me and my friend group. Or they would say certain things, and maybe I would say, maybe you shouldn't say that to other people. And they would maybe get offended, and I would be really confused because if they're your friend, I would dream that they're not supposed to, like, if you tell them you shouldn't say something because they could offend somebody else of your skin color, you would think that they wouldn't get offended themselves and say, well, I wasn't even trying to be like that, and I was overreacting. So I would just feel separated, and it would make me not want to talk to them about anything that I was dealing with and stuff.
Has that been repaired at all?
One example was one of my friends that I ended up going to church with. It was repaired, like, over time. Like, at first, like, she grew up in a very conservative household, and so when we met each other at church, it was like she would ask me questions that shouldn't be asked and would say stuff, and our friendship grew because she was willing to learn stuff. A lot of my other ones, I think I just like would let it slide, but it would end up bothering me in the long term, knowing that they still thought like that, and if I ever said something to them, they would just get mad at me for even saying something to them about it.
Wow.
Yeah, most of them did, or most of them would just apologize, but then it would come up again. But there is a select few that I remember that never apologized, just would actually try to justify their reason for what they believe.
This is in context to the last person I just talked to, who he said he was always feeling like he had to try to fit into a white world.
I actually went to Bloomington Junior High, and then we moved. Bloomington Junior High has a pretty big minority rate in general, so when I moved to the Evans Junior High, it was a whole new world. So yeah, I did try to fit in. I changed my hair because I thought my hair for some reason would affect the way that people talk to me. I didn't change my personality, but I was a lot more boxed in. Like I wasn't necessarily 100% me. And then I also translated to when I went to high school at Normal West, because most of the people I was around were white. And whenever I did something that like maybe feels like dancing or said a joke that they didn't relate to, I would always get weird stares. And I don't feel like they're necessarily doing it on purpose. And it wasn't everybody, but there would be times where it just felt so uncomfortable. And I understand that they're not going to get every single joke, but to be stared at like you're crazy or stared at because they don't get it to a certain way, it just can come off unwelcoming. And I don't even know if they realize that.
When George Floyd died in police custody, and with all the protests and things that are going on right now, how have you been processing all of this in the last couple of weeks?
It's been really hard to process. When the George Floyd killing happened, it was like one thing happened right after another, and there's like four more things that happened after that. So it's just a lot of things coming at you at once. Processing it was a lot, especially with social media, because there was so much on social media, and it was so confusing because the information people were handing out, people were bringing up different cases that happened years ago. It was just a lot to the point where I just didn't want to go on social media anymore. But it was also a processing, which I found a lot of my friends that were not of my skin color were also like supporting me and calling me, which had never happened before. Like people that I didn't really talk to that much reach out to me, which meant more than they will probably ever know, and asking me if I was okay. And all I could tell them is that I was good for what was happening right now in the world, because it was just so much to process that I didn't even know whether to say I was fine, because I thought I was fine, but I would like just feel almost to a point like numb.
Why does this time seem to be different?
There might not have been a lot of change in laws, but I think there's a lot of change in heart. A lot more people saw evidence about what was happening to African Americans or people of color when it came to police brutality, because they're on Facebook, they're on YouTube. And when you see that, you can't really ignore it anymore. And once you see proof, you're like, well, I've never been treated that way, and no one should ever be treated that way. And when you see people being treated that way, you want to do something about it.
That's Bloomington native Jayana Fennell speaking with WGLT's John Norton. Fennell says she has seen an increase in support for groups like Black Lives Matter from whites and older people because social media is shining a light on abuses and brutality. She says that's what helps laws to get changed, and because when so many people support a cause, something has to come of it. Thurston Stevenson says he experienced racial microaggressions as early as third grade. At 14, he said, police asked if he and his younger friends were doing a gang initiation while playing tag. Stevenson is one of the leaders of the Bloomington Normal Young Adult Advocacy Group, Next Gen Initiative. He speaks with John Norton. Stevenson says he's also been followed in stores and pulled over more than once for matching the description.
Part of the problem today is that little micro things like that happen, that people can say, oh, that could have happened to anybody. But it's not about it happening to anybody, because it didn't happen to anybody. It happened to me. And we all know the reason it happened to me. It's because I fit the description. And the description, sadly, is just that I'm black.
I've had a few people have a similar type of conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And it just strikes me as like they have told me that you just learn you have to stomach it.
Mm-hmm.
And basically just keep this inside.
Yeah.
That's got to tear you up after a while, doesn't it?
Honestly, yes. It's honestly getting to the point in my life where I can't stomach it much longer. And that's not to say that I'm going to do anything crazy or violent, but definitely speaking up and not letting it slide. I want to be the peacekeeper at all times. I want to be a good example. I want to let stuff go. But it's kind of getting to a point where it's like, I'm over letting it go. You know, it's wrong. It needs to be seen as wrong by everybody. You know, you got to pick your battles. But at this point, it's kind of getting to the place where, like, every time I face this battle, I want to fight it, because it has to change. Even little stuff, like a lot of white people that I've never met before, you know, joke with me like we're friends and say all these black jokes. And it's like, yo, I've never met you. You're not my friend. And I don't want to be your friend because you're being ignorant and making these black jokes. And normally I don't say anything. I just ignore it. But like, it's getting to the place where like, why do you think that's okay? I hate to almost say this, but I feel like there's almost nothing that upsets white people enough except for you to call them racist as far as jokes go. And so that's kind of why certain white people don't understand how inappropriate it is to tell those jokes, especially to somebody that you don't know. I think that we really need to acknowledge this issue and that it's not so far gone that people try to make it seem, and that it's not okay to keep doing these microaggressions, because honestly, as you can see all over the country, people are fed up and people aren't going to keep accepting it much longer. And, you know, it's frustrating, and it's really hard to keep having to stomach this and keep having to be the bigger man.
Thurston Stevenson is a leader in the Bloomington Normal Young Adult Advocacy Group Next Gen Initiative. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT, made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm Charlie Schlenker. This is Bloomington Normal's Public Media.